we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to Animal Voices Radio,
Canada's only radio show and podcast on animal advocacy and compassionate living.
This is 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada, Friday, May 17th, 2019. For the next hour, I'm your host, Jen. I'm joined in studio by my operator who saved my life today, Jody Pongratz.
Hello.
Thank you for being here today.
You're very welcome.
I don't know how to push all the buttons properly, especially when I'm panicked live on air. What would I do without you? So this show is brought to you by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Our show today features three interviews with local activists on a variety of topics, including compassionate dog training, a local entrepreneur who has a vegan t-shirt shoe company, as well as a bath and body product line. And finally, we have an interview with one of our frequent guests, David Isbister, local activist, on his recent meeting at the Vancouver Aquarium with the new director, Lasse Gustafsson, to try to find some middle ground in transitioning the aquarium to a more humane facility. I'm actually really excited about this, cautiously excited, but excited nonetheless. We have two prizes to give away on the show today, generously donated by one of our guests, Serena. It's a vegan t-shirt with a witty logo on the front. You get to choose your own size and which one you want, and a bath and body gift pack. So the first two people who call in with a donation for the Animal Voices show for the amount of $20 or more will receive one of these two gifts. The number you can call right now or within the hour is 604-684-8494. One more time, 604-684-8494. So today we have a local Vancouverite, one of my dear friends, Serena, on the show today. Serena, I just love you for being one of my vegan comrades and one of my animal rights activist comrades, and we see each other on a fairly regular basis. Welcome to the show today. It's so good to have you on.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Jen. Thanks for inviting me.
No problem. So, first of all, for our listeners that don't know you, can you tell us about your journey to veganism?
So, I became vegan about 3 years ago, although I started the journey way before that. I worked at a company with many vegans and vegetarians, so I got exposed to the way they were eating. And in 2013, I was given the opportunity for my work to participate in a week-long vegan challenge. So it was part of the campaign, though, to promote the film The Ghost in the Machine, which exposes the realities of animals used for fur. So it wasn't specifically for like, whole vegan message, just, like, one part of it. So I was able to complete the challenge for that week, but I couldn't maintain the vegan lifestyle after that. And then, so that was like in 2013. And it wasn't until 3 years ago that I got invited to a potluck where people just brought produce and made a bunch of different beautiful vegan creations. And I discovered how easy it was to actually change, like, overnight. And part of my journey was to go to vegan restaurants and just eat out, so it made it a lot easier for me to transition.
And I love that you always post videos from vegan restaurants. Even when you're traveling, you make me want to go to those places just to eat at the restaurants you go to.
Yeah, I love inspiring people, and a lot of my friends got inspired by what I posted from all my trips, that they've actually participated in my vegan food tours.
Oh, that's awesome. And now you've just started some vegan businesses. I'm just in awe of your
your ability to just, you know, take on a challenge like that. That's got to be scary to leave a comfortable job and just wing it and start your own business. And I just saw you recently at the Veg Expo with your stand, and you had t-shirts with the best witty slogans. And I just love a good witty vegan t-shirt, and your bath products and your vegan shoes. So tell us about these businesses and your products.
So I started Rub-A-Dub Bath and Body, which is a cruelty-free vegan and handmade cosmetic company. I worked at a cosmetic company that was mostly vegan, but it wasn't 100% vegan. So I saw the opportunity to be like fully in, like 100% vegan. And it's so important for me to get the message across that we don't need to test on animals. So I'm like so committed to providing 100% cruelty-free and vegan products. And so it's like our passion of providing the bath experience like an adventure. So every time you step in the bath, you're like transported to a new world of scents and colors. Yeah.
I love that. I'm a bath queen, so that is really a product that I will be buying from you for sure.
Awesome. I take baths every day, so oh, wow. I love a good bath.
Awesome. What are your favorite products that you have?
My favorite product is a Strawberry Star. It reminds me of my childhood.
Uh-huh. And your shoes, some of them look like leather. What material are you using on those?
We're using synthetic material. It's made out of plastic.
Okay.
Yeah. Although we really want to use the pineapple leather offered by Penatech.
Right.
And they will only offer it to people who have established businesses. So we're working on establishing ourselves that we can provide pineapple leather for people.
That's intriguing. And is it quite durable?
I'm not sure about the pineapple leather, but our shoes are durable and they're waterproof, so it's perfect for the Vancouver weather.
Oh, I hate to say that we do need that, but absolutely we do in the city.
Yeah.
And
yeah, for sure.
I wasn't able to fit pictures of all your t-shirts on our website, animalvoices.org. You can see one of them on there, but can you just tell our listeners some of the witty slogans that you have on your t-shirts?
One of them is, I do not eat cock, I'm vegan, and there's a picture of a rooster.
Oh, my.
A popular one is the one with the cow, and it says, leave my tits alone.
Leave my tits alone, that's good. And I think there's another one. I don't know if this was your stall or someone else's, hashtag me too, with a picture of a mother cow.
Yes, that's my shirt.
Okay.
Hashtag me too. And actually, this past weekend, I was in Agassiz volunteering at the Abundance Community Farm. And I noticed there was quite a bit of dairy farms in the area. So I decided to just stop on the side of the road and like go and take a peek. And it wasn't a very pleasant sight. And I actually had a chat with a cow, and I apologized for all that it's endured in its life.
Oh, that would be difficult. Yeah. I do love cows. They are the most gentle creatures, I think.
Yes, they are. And for all these mothers that are there, they look like they were parked in parking stalls.
Oh.
That's like the kind of space that they had.
Yeah, so doesn't surprise me. Yeah, well, last week we did a Mother's Day show where every year we honor the female animals in the animal agriculture industry who are exploited for their reproductive systems. And we just talk about what mother animals go through every day, and they're not really acknowledged, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so
it's such a,
sorry,
a
go ahead.
Statement. It's such a powerful statement, like the hashtag me too, because it's not just for human females who get sexually assaulted or harassed. It's for all creatures to get sexually assaulted and harassed.
Yeah, and the animals have no reporting system and really no rights either.
No.
Well,
why not?
So for our listeners who are inspired by your advocacy and your veganism and obviously want to support an amazing person like you rather than some big corporation, where can our listeners find your products?
We have a website, rubadub.ca, and for the shirt, it's wera.ca. So we're actually offering a promotion for our for your listeners of Animal Voices Radio. It's 20% off our subscription for the whole Victoria Day long weekend.
Oh, wow. That's very generous of you. Thank you so much.
Yeah. And we have a couple of giveaways. So one is a gift basket for the bath app, and then one shirt of the listener's choice.
Fantastic. And we will be talking about that later on in the show. And thank you so much for being on today. If you missed any of what Serena said and you wanted to check out where you can find her products, again, everything's on animalvoices.org. And of course, you can have a look on Facebook as well, Animal Voices Vancouver. Serena, thank you so much. I wish you all the best in your business.
Thanks, Ken. Thanks for inviting me.
We'll see you at the next Animal Rights event.
For sure.
Okay, take care.
I just want to announce again the contest. If you can call 604-684-8494, if you are looking to get this prize pack, there are two prizes available if you donate $20 or more to the Animal Voices show. Thank you.
Nikki. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tell us about your business.
I'm the owner and operator of Wilkie Walks, which is a dog walking company on the North Shore that specializes in private walks for puppies, senior dogs, or reactive dogs, dogs with behavioral problems that need a little more special one-on-one attention and more of a training walk than just a regular walk.
And the reason I'm having you on today is because I'm from small towns. I came from Victoria, and then I lived in Whistler. And when I moved to Vancouver, something I noticed was the way people walk their dogs here. It really stood out as really unusual to me. I've never seen people with prong collars on their dogs in the towns I used to live in, and choke collars, and people yanking on the leashes and giving their dogs such a small amount of leash. And I just think, I'm generalizing here, but it is the majority that I see. They don't seem to be dogs that are enjoying a nice walk, and it drives me crazy. And I've connected with you quite a while back, and we had discussions around this. And I know you have your opinions on these inhumane training methods, and you recommend better ways of teaching animals that are maybe pulling a little bit not to. And, you know, when I've gone up to people who do have prong collars or something like that on their dog, I have actually recommended your walking business because I know that you will recommend something more humane. And is this something that you find yourself in conversations with as well with the public?
I do see it more than I'd like to. And that includes shock collars on dogs. And I think it does come down to a lack of knowledge for a lot of people. A lot of, owners are given information by, you know, pet professionals or trainers in the industry telling them that this is what they need to do in order to have a dog that behaves for them. And because it's an unregulated industry, you've just got so many people with various educational backgrounds all giving different, you know, opinions and methods, and it can be really confusing to people. So I think for some people, you know, if they were given or shown another method, they would be open to that, because I like to think that most people who have a companion animal in their life, they do not want to cause harm to that animal. They want to help that animal feel safe. You know, again, you might have some people that have kind of an old school thinking that if they are not in control of their dog the entire time, you know, if they're not the alpha, which is a really outdated way of looking at a relationship with dogs, that they're going to have an animal that takes control and dominates them, and they're not able to, you know, walk their dog without using these methods or being really harsh. So you get a mix of people who simply don't know any better or think that's how they have to be with a dog, and that is false.
And so do you have any success stories on how you've basically been able to use a ethical, force-free way of handling and shown someone that it's possible to do this and to get the results they're looking for?
Definitely. I walk a lot of reactive dogs, some dogs that are very fearful of either people or dogs, and they are all walked on harnesses. I don't have any dogs that are walked on anything else. And I've got dogs that are, you know, Rottweilers, Pit Bulls, German Shepherds. These are strong, powerful dogs. And they can walk calmly on a harness. It is the most safe and effective way to walk a dog, especially a dog that is reactive and scared and that's going, you know, to lunge or bark at something. You don't want to add to that fear by having something tighten around their neck or zap them.
That makes sense.
Yeah, they're taking in associations about what's happening around them. And if, let's say, you've got a dog who's just a strong puller, and you think, I got to put a prong on them because I can't walk them otherwise. They're going to pull me down the street. So you put a prong on the dog. They're excited. They see another dog. They start pulling out of excitement. It automatically hurts. They think, ouch, I'm going to stop pulling. This is painful. And over time, every time they see a dog, their neck is getting yanked on. They're going to associate dogs equal my neck hurts. I'm in pain. And they might actually become aggressive towards other dogs.
Wow, that's interesting.
This created a behavioral problem that wasn't there to stop another problem.
That makes sense, and I never thought about that, but I feel like that would be a compelling story to tell the next person I see who's using a prong collar.
Yeah, a prong collar is kind of like a short-term solution that can cause another long-term problem.
Mm-hmm.
It might stop the behavior right away, but there's going to be costs to that, and there's going to be negative side effects. Not to mention, you're kind of, not building a great foundation with that animal.
Yeah, I really think that when someone has one of those devices on their animals, they shouldn't have an animal in the first place. It really upsets me. Do you talk to people when you see them with a prong collar? I mean, not necessarily when you're out on a walk with your business, but just in general.
I've stopped people that I've seen being quite rough with their dog and kind of yanking and yelling at their dog or pulling up really tight on like a choke chain.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually offered people, hey, if I give you a harness right now, will you stop doing that to your dog?
Aww.
And I've had people take me up on that. I had one guy like stop right away and he said, oh, I didn't know, what am I supposed to do? Just kind of looking for help. And then you get people who are the opposite and are going to tell you, you know, get lost, don't tell me what to do, or just simply ignore you.
Yeah.
It's really hard because it's natural if you tell someone they're doing something incorrect that they would become defensive. So it is challenging to kind of just walk up to someone in the middle of their walk and be like, hey, there's actually a better way. Some people are open to it, and some people are not.
Well, I actually have a funny story around that. In my neighborhood, there was a fellow who not only had a prong collar on his dog, but he was yanking on it quite a bit. And he didn't even look like he liked his dog. I would see him walking the dog all the time. And I went up and I just explained, you know, that's dangerous for the dog and unkind, and there's other ways. And he got really mad. He had some, you know, things to say to me that I can't say on the radio. And I said, look, my intentions are good. I know you love your dog too. And I'm just trying to ask you to please not do that. Imagine how that would feel on your neck. And, you know, I've seen pictures online of dogs' necks with holes in them. And there's from these devices. And there's actually a lot of very delicate anatomy in the neck of an animal or anyone. And guess what? I see him around the neighborhood now and his dog's on a harness and I say hi to him. He doesn't have a clue who I am. He's forgotten, but he's actually really nice to me when I say hi. So I just smile to myself and I think, I don't know if it was my conversation where he was initially defensive and then he let the seed grow in his head, or maybe someone else said it, or maybe he just figured it out, but it doesn't matter. I'm just happy to see that dog looking a lot happier now. And he's not even yanking on the leash even. It's just, it's a peaceful walk. It looks nice to see them. They look happy.
That's amazing.
So you never know. I mean, it's funny. Last week's radio show, we talked to a local Vancouver mom of a three-year-old who was in the lineup of the Vancouver Aquarium a couple of years ago. Happened to be a day that there was a protest, and our local activist, David Isbister, called out to her, "You can do better." And she was defensive, and she said she complained about him to a lot of people for a week, and then eventually realized he was right. She can do better. Uh-huh. Not only did she stop going to the aquarium, she went vegan. Her kid is vegan, and now she's an activist. Uh-huh. And last week she showed up at the aquarium for the annual protest on the other side of the lineup with the activists. So, I mean, it's worth it to say something. I know people get defensive, but you know what? Defensiveness is sometimes a sign that they know you're right. And it's sinking in.
Exactly.
So you never know.
I do think it is important to say something, especially if the animal is clearly stressed and in pain. I mean, yanking up on that dog, you could cause serious physical damage.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important to stop and say something, even if it is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
It will be, but
yeah.
That animal is actually, you know, the one who's really uncomfortable, so...
Right. And now your dog Charlie is just the sweetest looking thing. And if everybody who's listening to the radio right now, you want to see Charlie, go to animalvoices.org. You'll see a picture of Nikki and Charlie. You said that he was the inspiration for you starting your business?
Yeah, I adopted Charlie in 2015 from the SPCA, Vancouver branch. And I didn't know really what I was getting into when I adopted him. Beautiful dog, sweet boy, but he had a lot of reactivity towards other dogs. He didn't have the greatest start, so he wasn't socialized around other dogs as a puppy. So, and he's a 85-pound husky mix, so he was a strong dude. He had no leash skills. He would drag me down the street if he saw a squirrel. He would drag me to the ground. I mean, I would come home crying sometimes, like, this is not what I signed up for at all. People would start avoiding us in the neighborhood because they would be like, there's that girl with the crazy dog having a meltdown. Yeah, it was rough in the beginning, but I found an amazing force trainer, Bravo Dog, on the North Shore, and she taught me so much. And once I switched perspective and kind of let go of my expectations of what I envisioned bringing that dog into my life, I wanted to have this amazing trail dog that I went out on the trail hiking with, and he could, you know, go to the dog park, go to the dog beach, and do all these things that I thought I had to do when bringing a dog into my life. And I learned, you know, he doesn't enjoy those things. Those things cause him stress. So why would I, you know, keep putting him in situations that's stressful for both of us? Why don't I accept the dog I have in front of me and try to work with him where he's at now? And then maybe in the future we can get to a better place. And that's 3 years. Fast forward 3 years later, I have my own business working with dogs like him, using positive reinforcement, you know, a harness, a treat bag, and setting them up for success. And I've got a walking club for other reactive dogs. He's got all these reactive dog friends. They don't play together, but we meet up and we walk side by side, and they're all calm, and you would not know there's a single reactive dog in that group. And no one is putting a prong, a shock collar, anything on any of these dogs.
Good. And now I'm curious, how does day one work with the reactive dog class?
Well, everyone has kind of worked with a trainer prior, so we all kind of know the drill, and we know what threshold our dog works at. So we start at a big field, and we create the space that we need. And then we slowly, you know, throughout the walk, if the dog is comfortable, we'll get closer and closer. But if the dog is not comfortable, then we don't need to get closer. We really listen to our dog and take, you know, read their body language. And if they're telling us they're uncomfortable, we don't punish them for that. Instead, we're going to help them feel better about what's going on in the environment. And that's the biggest difference with punishment-based training versus positive reinforcement. We want to help our dog feel good. We think about their emotions, how they're feeling, and we're going to teach them other skills, other behaviors that they can do instead of barking and lunging. We're going to give them an alternative behavior that is more beneficial to them because they're less stressed, and more beneficial because we're not stressed as well.
Right.
As opposed to just yelling at the dog saying, no, no, bad dog. I mean, that doesn't help anyone. It doesn't teach the dog anything.
So what behavior would you teach when they're lunging that they could do that's more peaceful for them and you?
Well, if the dog lunging, there's so much, and it's very individual based on the dog, but, there's hand target touch cue that you could teach a dog, the hand target, you could teach a dog a look at me, instead, so when they see the dog, they turn and look at you instead of lunging and barking, but it really depends on if the dog is genuinely fearful of other dogs. You're simply not even going to ask the behavior of that dog. You're just going to give them a tasty treat. And every time they see a dog, they get a tasty treat.
Mm.
And they learn over time, oh, dogs mean I get a tasty treat. Nothing bad happens. Instead, they'll start turning and looking to their human on their own, like, hey, where's my treat? I see a dog. Where's my treat? Instead of barking and lunging.
Wow, that really works.
That's science. That doesn't happen overnight. That's the thing. That takes time. That takes consistency. And that takes setting the dog up. So you're not going to start with doing that with a dog 5 feet away. You might start 60 feet away.
Wow.
It really depends on the dog. And that's why you really need to find a great certified force-free trainer that can show you this and tailor the training to that specific dog.
And I have another question. What has worked for dogs who pull? Because when I go up to people who are using forceful training methods, that's always their answer. But my dog pulls. And I always say to them, yeah, but your dog is pulling right now with that cruelty device. So it's not working. And the dog is harming itself. So, like, how do you get a dog to stop pulling?
Why is the dog pulling? That would be my first question. What is... Like, there's a lot of things that go into that. Is that dog really excited and they're on their way to a dog park and they know that? So they're pulling the entire time because they know as soon as they get to the dog park, they're going to be let off leash. I mean, it really depends. Are they just pulling because they want to get to the next bush and smell that scent on the bush? And if they are pulling, then you have to make it rewarding for them to not pull, which means you have to engage with them and reinforce more leash walking, which is going to take, again, time. Like, you have to set aside time. Okay, I'm going to practice for 10 minutes just having my dog walk beside me with a loose leash. Every time they turn and look to me and the leash is loose, I'm going to pay them a really tasty reward for that. Anytime that, you know, they're pulling and they want to pull me down, I'm going to stop and we're not going to move forward. Because they're pulling because they want access to something. And if they keep pulling and you keep moving forward, well, it's reinforcing the pulling. Of course they're going to keep pulling. It's working. They're getting closer to what they want.
Wow, that totally makes sense. And I just didn't think about that. That's genius.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, no worries.
So are you currently full with your Wilkie Walks walking company, or are you taking more clientele?
I'm currently pretty full right now.
Okay. So we shouldn't send you any business, but if anyone is interested in checking you out, where can they find out about you?
My website, wilkiewalks.ca.
Great.
And you can also find me on Instagram and Facebook.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I've wanted to have you on for so long, as this is an issue that I'm faced with almost every day when I go out for a walk. And I do hope that people become a little bit more humane in the way that they treat their animals. So thank you for the tips today. If I had a dog, I'd be trying them out. It sounds like they're really effective.
Yes, definitely. Compassion. Always use compassion when working with your dog.
Thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon, Nikki.
Okay, thank you so much,
Jen.
Okay, take care.
People are queer.
I'm Jody Pongratz, your host. Friday mornings, 10:30 to noon. Tune in to Sound Resistance.
There's a type of person who wakes up every day.
off to work, it's 9 to 5. In 2 weeks they get paid. This is your life. This
is your life. CFRO, Vancouver's Cooperative Radio, 100.5 FM.
Everybody seems to say, I never thought I'd end up this way.
Who do we call the enemy? The enemy is poverty. We war, peace out the enemy. And we build the wall to keep us free. That's why we build the wall. We build the wall to keep us free.
Because we have.
We're gonna take your farm, son, we're gonna go to work. We're gonna build a pipeline, gonna excavate. Frick, frack, and drill and toss, sense and reap.
They took our land, but not traditions and culture.
Why us?
There is a struggle, but it's making us stronger.
Why us?
Remove your feelings if you wanna ride with me. I'm about to go to war right now, no
I'm Jody Pongrass, your host. Friday mornings, 10:30 to noon. Tune in to Sound Resistance.
So we have a really interesting update from one of the regular activists at the Vancouver Aquarium. Today we're speaking with David Espister. Hi, thank you for being on the show again.
Oh, thanks for letting me come and continue to dominate the airwaves so no one else can talk.
We love having you on. So this is actually quite an exciting breakthrough, that one that I never thought would happen. In all the years we've been protesting at the aquarium and trying to get a conversation going between the activists and management there, they've really avoided nearly every opportunity we've given them, including having a debate with the director of the film Vancouver Aquarium Uncovered, so that they could publicly address what they say is dishonesty in his film, and that never happened. So you had a recent breakthrough. Why don't you tell us about that?
So when we were at the Empty the Tanks protest, Mr. Gustafson and a man named Jake, who sadly his last name escapes me, but Jake is a captive animal welfare specialist who's doing the sort of animal management side of things there. They approached us at Empty the Tank.
Sorry, and, I just have to say, doesn't that sound like an oxymoronic job title?
It kind of does, yeah.
Yeah, okay, carry on.
Yeah. So they approached us and asked to meet with us kind of on the spot. We politely declined but said we could come back. And we didn't know for sure if they would message or reach out or anything, but they did. They followed up pretty much right away the night before yesterday. They reached out to Jeff Matthews and invited Jeff Matthews and I to come there and discuss our position.
That's such a breakthrough. I'm really excited to hear about that conversation. And obviously, we activists have a very long list of issues that we want to talk to these people about and things that we want changed. And I wouldn't imagine there would be too much middle ground to meet on. But how did your conversation go? What topics were you able to bring up?
Oh, gosh. It was actually relatively all-encompassing. We spoke about permanently ending cetacean captivity. We talked about how activists were accused of killing the whales. We talked about rehab and rescue and the differences between those. We talked about their sponsors, like tech, and the plastics industry. We talked about them stopping to participate in self-accreditation and possibly withdrawing from CASA, or at least stopping trading with CASA in the way that they had. We talked about CASA's effect on animals. The Vancouver Aquarium at Calgary Zoo, at GB Zoo, at Marineland, and how they were self-accredited by John Nightingale and Clint Wright. We talked about the future of the Vancouver Aquarium. We talked about engaging outside panels of individuals like the SPCA, the VHS, consulting scientists, DFO. We talked about them becoming leaders in 3D, 4D, 5D, and other educational technology. We asked them to end affiliation with ocean destroyers and take a position on Kinder Morgan and pipelines that can harm salmon and whales. We talked a little bit about the Marineland belugas. who they should meet, like, you know, Camille Lapchuk and Anna Pippas, other people that should intervene. We talked a bit about his history, you know, his history of being with Greenpeace, WWF, and Oceania. We talked about his vision, and then stuff that they're doing now to address some of these issues.
And you posted a video after your meeting, and I watched just a little bit of it, and I believe you said something to the effect of when you brought up the idea of not having animals there, he thought that that was required and sort of expected of the public. And it sounded like he wasn't too keen on finding sanctuary for all the animals. And it has me thinking about something you mentioned a minute ago with the 3D technology, you know, in Times Square right now, they're doing animation of aquariums where the public can go and feel like they're really part of the experience. There's even National Geographic scientist interviews within that experience. And I will be emailing Lasse and seeing if he's interested in something like that. But I really do think that would be effective. So what was that conversation about specifically there?
So he told me that he was so surprised to see that a smaller city like Vancouver, and we are pretty small. He talked about us being sort of different from global cities like Shanghai and Nairobi and Moscow and places like that. He was very surprised, as he says, a typical Swede who may not know enough about Canada, to see that the video gaming industry was so huge here. And he said that, I actually have it written down, quote, "You'll be happy to know that I've already engaged the video game creating community for projects in the future here at Van Aqua." So I guess they're looking into it. He had trouble. He told me that he needed to be convinced and helped in order to envision an aquarium without a collection of animals. But he did express a fair amount of disdain for keeping certain animals. So, for instance, he did say that he wanted to make it completely impossible, or next to impossible, to be able to keep whales at Vancouver Aquarium, so that people like from the DFO couldn't actually pressure them to take whales. He feels that that's part of what's happened in the past, as John Nightingale was into that, because the DFO would just be like, you know, there's a whale, you guys have a tub, let's put the whale in the tub. And so he said that if he changes the structure of Vancouver Aquarium from being like an outmoded entertainment model with like a water stadium into more of a science center, then he felt that that should address the whale problem. It seems like both of them, both Jake and Lassie, do want to permanently end cetacean captivity, but they have some feelings about how they'd go about that, whether they just turn their back on all captive cetaceans and just move forward, or whether they would assist the problem that is global, or whether they do a little bit of both. So,
Did the topic come up of the grossly underfunded Marine Mammal Rescue Center in comparison to the profits that the Vancouver Aquarium makes?
Sort of. I didn't push that one too much because he essentially said that they want to become a ton more of that. And that he had already expressed not disagreements or true disdain, but just kind of like as an afterthought, he said something along the lines of, well, that rescue center, you know, people should be able to see the good work we do without bothering the animals, and that's something we have to look at as well, how to do more of that. So I figured that was fine for them, because we were trying to focus on captivity and sponsors, ocean destroyers, and accountability generally. We made some really good...
I was just going to say, back to the accountability issue, something that struck me in your post-discussion video that you made for us was that he wanted to be more transparent with their so-called collection of animals. And this has been an issue that's bothered me in the past. I've called the aquarium numerous times to find out where I can locate the... backstory on every animal they have in there, and they're only willing to talk about the ones that are true rescues. And so the majority of the public is believing that most of the animals are rescued and non-releasable, and the aquarium's done them a favor.
Right.
And my response that I get from anyone I phone there is aggression. I've been hung up on, even though I'm asking politely. They want to know who I am, why I'm asking, and they will not answer my question. And they say, give me your phone number and we'll call you back. And as an activist, I'm not willing to give them my phone number, obviously.
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, when he said that he thinks there should be transparency, was it specifically every animal in there?
It was. He actually said that he believes in, and this is another quote, baseline radical transparency. He wants to, he's already said that he's in the middle of formulating a full list of the entire collection of every animal, fish or anemone or jellyfish, everything. And he's calling that a heat map. So he's looking for deficits in care, and other things with his animal care partner, Jake. And that he's going to document them and put out the full list and even try to work on, getting a list of how that animal, was sourced and their life and just generally like who they are as an individual in that aquarium. I don't know what that eventually looks like, what radical transparency looks like to him. But he did say the words deep change a lot. And I have to say, when I got into the aquarium, the mood was different. There were no suspicious looks. There were no, you know, everyone was pretty nice and open. And even just in the subtle comments that they made, seemed to indicate that they really respect this new fellow, and that, the last person at his position was restrictive, perhaps, in some ways. It's the feeling I got. The person who let us in and out of the building with our visitors' passes, they said to me, oh, don't you just get the feeling that he's a nice guy? We all really, really, really like him and really respect him. And it's already so much different than it was before. The feelings around here are so much different. And I said, oh, okay. I'm like, what do you mean? And this person said, well, you know, before, we were all really directly restricted on interacting with anyone who would be considered a protester. And now, you know, sort of from day one, he's engaged with your narrative and he's, interested in hearing it, which we think, a lot of us think, was something that should have been heard before. So.
Yeah.
It looks like they're trying to make a change for the better. I don't know what that'll look like for all captive species.
Mm-hmm.
But, I don't know what it ends up meaning, but it seems to be a better position than Mr. Nightingale's, which was that we were all marauding whale killers who were crazy, extremist vegans, bordering on terrorists. I think that's probably a better starting point.
Yeah, he earned the name John Frightens Whales, didn't he?
Yeah, I think Con Frightens Whales would be better.
Oh, that would be good too. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not stopping until every animal in there is removed and put somewhere more sanctuary-like. I don't know how anyone can think that. I've been in there. I went in there a year ago. I took video of every single animal, and it is absolutely shocking to me that somebody thinks that's a humane environment. They look bored and depressed, and I actually saw a river ray slamming itself continuously up against a gate in the side of its tank, and its tank was about...
What kind of animal did you say?
It was a river ray, a spotted river ray.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it was the size... its tank was probably five times the size of its body. And it was just repeatedly slamming itself up against a gate that came between its own enclosure and another river ray enclosure. And it was just depressing. I mean, I don't know how we're going to get them all released. I feel like we're not. And I feel like Jake, whoever he is and whatever his background is, if he's in charge of deciding what is okay, and if he's in the past been deciding, put in charge of deciding that this is okay, he needs to be challenged. And I like that you mentioned Anna Pippis and who was it, Camille Labchuk or Rebecca Breder, did you say?
I actually also challenged Jake directly and Mr. Gustafson about Jake's history, because he said, Jake outside of the aquarium said something defective. Oh, well, I've worked in, I'm an captive animal welfare expert. I'm quite traveled, and this is my absolute expertise. I worked to Calgary Zoo, and I interrupted and said, well, Calgary Zoo has seen 400 deaths, mainly from negligence, over the last 10 years, so I'm not sure that that's a great credential to roll out. And that sort of stopped.
How did he respond?
He pretty much said nothing. He just kind of said, well, I understand that, and that was part of the reason of my leaving at one point, or something along those lines. It was part of my decision to seek, you know, places where we could become industry leaders or whatever. So I kind of rolled my eyes at that. And Mr. Gustafson, you know, kind of kept mentioning this. I mentioned the Calgary Zoo thing again, and then he said, in the meeting, he said, wait, are you saying that you think an aquarium should have absolutely not one captive animal? And I said, yes, that's my position. I said, but I don't want you to look at it as like an extremist view. I'd like you to look at it along the lines of a continuum or a spectrum. I believe that people probably shouldn't have cats and dogs and fish, and I know that there's an enormous problem, so that sometimes the people who are best to look after those animals and are in a rescue capacity may be vegans or abolitionists or people who technically don't believe in pets or even that name, you know, should be companion animals or animals that you're the guardian of. And I spoke a bit about that, about how that's not an extremist belief. It's a spectrum of beliefs, because it's not actually possible at this time to just eradicate all animals who are without a home and not have them under the care of humans. But I said it's a huge, huge privilege and a huge, huge responsibility as to how we approach that. And so from a profit perspective, that's not the best approach. But from a rescue, rehabilitation, and release wherever possible approach, that might be a better baseline. And he asked us a number of times, well, how would we do it? And I said, well, this isn't just a question for protesters. I mean, you're the one hired to do that here. And that's when we went over, you know, more of the 3D, 4D, stuff that's out there, and also referred him to speak to Mr. Racanelli, the director of the Baltimore, the National Aquarium in Baltimore, the one that's decided to house all of their dolphins in sanctuary by 2020. They're a little bit behind on that, but they're making progress. Or even the Monterey Aquarium that has just an aquarium that's open to the sea, so animals coming into the aquarium are just there by choice, and you can see them in like an environment that they're free to leave from. So he thought those were both intriguing ideas, and he said he'd follow up on those. He took a lot of notes and wrote down our suggestions, so he at least had the outward appearance of wanting to hear the perspective. But I don't know where it's going to land in practices.
Is he willing to have a talk with Lori Marino of the Whale Sanctuary Project for cannabis sanctuary?
Jake already knows Lori Marino.
Okay.
And he has heard of her, and he was open to both the Whale Sanctuary Project and Born Free. And he said, oh, well, I'll make a point to meet with Lori Marino, or at least speak to her on the phone. And he said the same thing about Mr. Racanelli. He said the same thing about Dr. Morton, a bunch of different people who would be good stakeholders for him to engage with. So I think it was positive, or at least had the outward appearance of improvement and positivity. But like I said, I don't know where it'll land when the advocating's all done and he makes his recommendation to the board on June 20th. He did say that half or more of the old guard, as he called them, is on the board, and that tourism also drives their decisions a fair amount, because I guess 1 out of 10 tourists who come to Vancouver go to the aquarium.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of those tourists ask for things like orcas still, and other large megafauna that are charismatic or whatever. And there was a couple of sort of problematic comparisons when he was sort of speaking about that captivity. He said, well, I mean, I pay people at the job here to come here and put on a suit, or come here 9 to 5 or whatever, and that's a form of slavery in itself. And I said, Mr. Gustafson, if I could just stop you right there. And he said, well, you can call me Lassie. And I said, in this case, I'm going to call you Mr. Gustafson and tell you that people coming to work, being compared to animals who cannot leave here unless they're dead, is actually a sentiment I resent a fair amount. I said, those people that you're speaking of still have their own agency. They still make their own decisions. They could leave at their own peril. They could go somewhere else. They can move cities. They can switch bosses. They can switch doctors. They can switch influencers in their lives. They can follow someone on social media or not. They have the ability to close themselves to stimulus from the outside world that they find negative. These animals absolutely do not. And I said I would appreciate you not making that reference. And he apologized and said, "Oh, I see how that's problematic." And he was just speaking to the fact that we all endure bondage from one another. And then Jeff and I essentially just said, "Well, we don't agree that we all need that. We would want to push for freedom, and we believe in autonomy in that way, which is why we're speaking against captivity."
Were you offered?
And he accepted that. So.
Good. Were you offered the possibility of continued meetings with him, or even an advisory role permanently as they make this transition?
Not an advisory role per se. We recommended that they have people in an advisory role. I didn't suggest myself because that's a little silly or arrogant for right now at this point. And we did agree that we would likely have to meet again, as he would want to solicit our feedback and stuff. He ran a couple of ideas past us around education, around focusing on salmon, because you can't tell the story of salmon without also telling the story of whales and cetaceans and the First Nations folks and First Peoples just generally. So they're looking to move more toward a reconciliatory scene that involves salmon. So that might take away opportunities to keep as many species in captivity, but by no means did I get the impression that they were going to end captivity or ask us to be advisors. But we got the impression there'd be another meeting or two, perhaps, or he would run some stuff by us. But I don't know what that, after this sort of like an hour and 15-minute meeting, I don't know what that actually means.
And I know that they're very concerned about the optics of continued protests outside the aquarium. At any point, did they try to negotiate a cessation of that activity if they made certain promises to us?
No, we didn't. Well, it was intimated. You know, I inferred that was what was being said, but he also believes, he says, and just being frank and upfront, he says he comes from protesting. He broke into factories. He chained himself to a dam that was being built in when he was a youth. So he says he comes from grassroots activism, and he understands it, and he believes that the aquarium absolutely has no right to even really besmirch the protesters like they have been in the past. So I think he has an upgraded position from Mr. Nightingale's position. It was weird. I hesitated to call it a position. I was going to use a curse word instead, but let's call it a position. And so it seems like, you know, no one there said, "Oh, Mr. Nightingale was a garbage human." But they also didn't seem to even tacitly support him anymore, like they had in the past. And it seems like Mr. Nightingale maybe ruled things with a restrictive sort of suppressive process before. Side note, when we looked up the aquarium under John Nightingale on Glassdoor, which is an app that rates employers by employees, Mr. Nightingale had a 17% approval rating on that app. And just to put that in perspective, 70% is beginning to be considered a low number.
Wow.
So there's a lot of, I think, from what I've understood, and I have other people who are connected to the aquarium who sometimes get some information to me, and I'm not sure about the validity of it because, you know, there's like 600 people that work there, and who knows, they're just maybe chatting it up, but it seems like he wasn't well-liked there at the end. It seems like he was more pushed out than retired. So I don't know. I'm getting the feeling that they want deep change, but what deep change looks like for someone with a legacy of unnecessarily exploiting whales till their untimely death repeatedly, I don't know what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I do look forward to hopefully talking to you again if you end up having another meeting with them, and we're in this together. We're not stopping the protests until every animal is free, so they're going to have to deal with that.
Can I add one thing?
Yeah.
Lassie's son is a vegan, like a strict vegan person who is... He's devoting his life to aquaculture of kelp for food and biodiversity sources. So he spoke proudly of his son and was happy to mention that his son was vegan. Lasse himself has been vegetarian for 25 to 30 years of his life, but he said that he had the misfortune to lose his vegetarianism because he worked in Russia for so long, and it was very, very difficult to be vegetarian in Russia at the time. So he says he's heading back that way, though. So he wanted us to know that. But his son apparently is like quite a vegan person, so I'm partly tempted to find his son and outreach to him as well. But
you've been listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Please join us for next week's show on Friday, May the 24th. We will have an interview with Capilano University instructor Nicholas Jennings to speak about his new university course coming up called Veganism and Sustainability, plus a feature interview with local vegan parent and food consultant Brigitte Jem. We will be speaking to her about the work she does for her vegan family kitchen, whose mission it is to teach people how to delight and nourish your family and eat more vegan meals made from scratch at home. We here at the Animal Voices Show modestly ask you to keep connected with Animal Voices via the World Wide Web. Our past shows can be listened to on our website, animalvoices.org, and all of our past podcasts are also available on iTunes and Google Play. Join our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and you can send us a message to give us your feedback and ideas for the show. Our program is brought to you today by our sponsor, Edible Planet. Edible Planet is a Vancouver-based education campaign and TV series to teach people about the world's most powerful edible plants and the fascinating people who bring them to market. Food is the world's most powerful tool to share the wealth and chronic illness, regreen the planet, and create lasting world peace today. Now is the time for a plant-based economy, because on this big, beautiful edible planet, the food we eat can change the world. Stay tuned now for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today, and remember to be kind to the animals.